What is up, everyone? This is Fireside Yankees. We've got the whole crew here. Myself, Jacob to my left. To the left of Jacob is Chris. We've got the whole panel here. Post-winter meetings, we don't have big transactions to talk about. The Yankees did not go away completely empty-handed. Cade Winquest, Rule 5 draft pick. That's something. At least we got something like, we got something. But there wasn't a lot of action for the Yankees, but there was a lot of league action. And whether it was big trades, big signings, or not really big trades, more big signings, and then setting the foundations for some potentially massive moves coming up over the next weeks or so, we're going to talk about all that and more right here on Fireside Yankees. Before we get into everything, Jacob, how you doing, my man? You're coming straight from Orlando.
Yes, I am. I had a really fun time at the winter meetings, met some cool people. And I just want to get us started with a note. It's not really baseball related, even though I am coming from the winter meetings. Maybe the coolest story of this week in all of sports, Philip Rivers just signed back with the Colts, and there's a good chance he's going to be starting on Sunday. So I took it upon myself to check the last time Philip Rivers played an NFL game, January 3rd, 2021. And I looked at the Yankees baseball reference from that page. I just wanted to be out there. The last time Philip Rivers played a game, DJ LeMahieu had not signed back with the Yankees yet. So DJ LeMahieu signed a 6-year, $90 million contract with the Yankees after Philip Rivers played his last game. He played 4.5 seasons with the team, got cut by the team because he was so washed up, and now he's a free agent again because, and nobody wants him because he's not good anymore. And Philip Rivers is now back in the NFL starting for the same team he started for before DJ signed that contract. So I thought that was a fun note to bring up to start this thing.
Would also like to know, I think Francisco Lindor was still in Cleveland.
Believe he was traded to the Mets 2 days before Philip Rivers' last game as a Colt.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. So, wow. I mean, that's been a while. Been a long,
yeah, it was
long,
literally
long
like during COVID. It was the last time he played a game. And he's coming back now. So that's
Did
cool.
you guys listen to this press conference?
Oh, yeah. He was, they asked Dude, him, they were like, how much do you weigh? And he was like, I have no idea.
Yeah. It almost made me cry, man. He was talking about, yeah, like my younger kids have never like seen me play ball before, so they don't remember. And they always ask, like, hey, like, why don't you play? And then his older kids are like, Dad, can you still do it? I was like, that's my dog, man. Go Philip. That's the same draft class as like Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger. Like, that's what we're talking about right now.
Nuts. Born that year. The year they were drafted, I was born.
Eli Manning, Eli Manning was washed up when I was a freshman in college. So the fact that Philip Rivers is still going to be coming back and playing now is crazy to me. It's
now,
like
Eli
a blast.
Eli Manning
can
come back and play right now too. We do not do any Eli Manning slander here.
Love Eli, man.
That's my guy.
I don't want to date myself, but I think I was a freshman in high school when Eli Manning got washed or was washed. Actually, Jeez. I might have been in middle school still. I might have been in middle school by the time like it was like the final, like the limelight of his career.
He was still good in 2018. Check the numbers. He had like 4,300 yards that year.
I will say he also had like one of the worst situations you could possibly have.
Yeah, he no O-line forever.
Dude, I was in middle school when he won his first title.
Wow.
That really meant something to me, man.
I was going to ask because it's kind of like all sunshine and roses for Jacob. But Chris, you've had a busy week too. You've had a very... very eventful.
Yeah, dude, different kind of busy. Obviously, I cover Ohio State and like Sharon Moore getting fired and college football world like turning upside down like during winter meetings. It's been awesome. So I've just kind of been a little bit underwater, but you know, catching back up. But yeah, no, things have been nuts. I mean, that's honestly the crazier head coaching stories I think I've ever covered.
Yeah, if you're a college football fan, you're like, Chris, I've seen this guy in the middle of a bunch of news in the last like 2 weeks. Yeah. He's in the middle of everything. This guy is churning. He's firing all cylinders in the college football world.
Yeah. We're a football podcast now. I think that speaks to how slow the winter meetings were for the Yankees. So,
I mean, sometimes, hey, I think the Sharon Moore stuff kind of indicates no news can sometimes be good news, right? Yeah, like sometimes it's good to not be in the headlines, but in the Yankee scenario here, they're in kind of a logjam. The reporting from The Athletic is that for Cody Bellinger, who seems to be their priority on the free agent market, he won't sign until after Kyle Tucker signs. Now, you might go, okay, well, maybe give it a couple of weeks. You know, he's a top free agent on the board. These guys usually go either during or right after the winter meetings. Problem: no one really seems to be in on Kyle Tucker. I think it was reported today by the beat writer on Sportsnet for the Blue Jays that the Blue Jays have like a 10 to 20% chance on Tucker. They don't even think they're at the top of the poll there. So with this logjam going on, I'll start with Chris here. Chris, Talk to me, man. Like, do you what are your kind of thoughts on this logjam and this slog that's going on for the Yankees right now?
Well, first of all, the Belly not signing until after Tucker thing is like clearly a Boris thing. Like, we all know that. But this feels like one of the more bizarre free agencies because the guy that is the A1A best player, his market is kind of shrinking, it feels like. And like the reasons are like doesn't burn to play baseball. And like, you know, maybe we're worried about the long-term projections. No one wants to give him the years. And so like this is like a case where I would have thought that by now you would have all the suitors, all the big bidders kind of lining up to take Kyle Tucker off the market. It's almost the exact opposite, and it does feel like, well, you know, Bellinger's a good enough player. He is generally a plan B. It feels like more people are interested in what his market could be versus the Kyle Tucker market, which I think, like, makes this thing super kind of bizarre. Because, again, like, you have the best player available, a 4-WAR player available, that we're just kind of waiting on. And there's no market for him. So it's bizarre to me, guys. It's kind of the one word I've got.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the result of the top teams these days with money, right? You think of the Yankees, Mets, and Dodgers. Like, they're in a league of their own in terms of how they can spend. And even Toronto's like entering that a little bit. But 15 years ago, the top free agent, like the team, the Yankees were going to make a massive offer regardless. They were barely going to think about it. Now, all three of those teams, and even Toronto, they're all analytically minded. So even if they want to go out there and spend money, unless you're a guy like Juan Soto or Shohei Ohtani, who you know is a superstar presence and is going to go out there and sell you the uniforms and fill out your stadium, you're going to get a calculated offer for these guys. So I think all three of those teams, even though the Dodgers and the Mets especially, they pretty much have infinite money to work with. They're still waiting for the Tucker market to drop down into whatever price range they feel is a fair, an offer that fits what they project he'll do in the future.
Yeah, what they're comfortable with. They're waiting for their comfort zone, I guess.
So it's like, we're in the new age now. It's analytics run this thing, and nobody's going to be overpaying for a guy without personality, with defensive worries in the future, and with these reports that he doesn't love the game. So I expect them to still make a lot of money, but this might take now another 5-6 weeks before anything gets rolling.
And it's one of those things where this is the kind of the looseness of MLB free agency. It's the most unrestricted of all free agencies. There's no salary cap. There are no like set contracts like, hey, this is your maxed out salary. There's no like one position group that dominates the market the way the quarterback market does. And even quarterbacks don't really hit free agency ever. So this is the weirdest form of free agency if you want to compare it to the other sports. With Kyle Tucker, as you guys mentioned, there's an opportunity cost there. You sign Kyle Tucker, odds are you're not in on Tarek Skubal next year. I know there's not really like another star player available for like the next two off seasons after, but Skubal is a guy where, if you sign Tarek Skubal, you have a name brand, like this guy is going to immediately be your highest selling jersey unless you're the Yankees or Dodgers, maybe the Mets because of Soto. But he could be in any offseason your highest selling jersey guy. You're the face of everything. You're projected automatically to be winners of the offseason. Tucker doesn't have that same kind of vibe to him, although I do think he's a very good player and I want him on the Yankees. Like, my response to all this would just be, all right, go pay Tucker then. Tell Boris, you know, kick rocks and you know, go sign Tucker. Because the thing I do have a fear of is the Yankees kind of getting caught up in this web of we need to sign Bellinger. We would like to sign Bellinger. The lack of other suitors for Bellinger makes it so it's not illogical to stay involved there. But the best course of action would be to try and sign Tucker. But even then, what if Tucker's not backing off his price? Maybe that's what's keeping teams uninterested, because we've seen a flurry of reports of, you know, the Mets, the Dodgers, they'll be opportunistic. For the Blue Jays, I think that they're probably the most defined Tucker suitor, but even that interest is mostly like, hey, they like the player. They would like to have him. They're not going to give him $400 million, but they'd like to have him. So I'm not really sure what you even do here if you're the Yankees. Like, you kind of have to just wait here. And this kind of plays into my point of this was boring. This sucked from like an entertainment standpoint, but no one has left the board that I'm like, oh yeah, this was a guy I wanted on the Yankees. Jacob, I'll start with you here. Do you feel as if, like what is your kind of, as a Yankee fan, or from an objective standpoint, how do you feel about the winter meetings for the Yankees?
I mean, pretty much what you said, like, I don't think much changes about it, because none of the guys who signed were really great fits. Like, of course, maybe one of the relievers would be a guy. Like Devin Williams before the winter meetings, I would have liked to bring him back. Maybe Edwin, I would have liked to put in an offer for him. But we have a budget. and we still want to go out and get another outfielder. We still want to go out and get another starting pitcher. So it probably wasn't going to go that way anyway in terms of paying a reliever a lot of money. And then you look at the other guys who signed, like Alonso, we didn't need to spend that much on a first baseman. Schwarber, we didn't need to spend that much on a DH. So I don't think that really, I don't know, people are frustrated right now with the lack of movement, but I think that's a product of the market, not a product of how the Yankees are going to operate this offseason going forward.
It generally feels like there is one domino people are waiting to fall. Obviously, like, I'm sure we'll talk about Skubal at some point and kind of the domino that could cause. But no, similar deal. I mean, the fact that things are moving so slow, I think probably bodes well for New York in the long run. I think, like, obviously, like, the longer you wait, generally speaking, the first set of contracts market-wise will be a little bit on the lower end, and then you'll see a spike late when there's, like, less players available. But no, like, I'm okay with being patient and waiting. I don't know where you guys are at, but I'm generally okay with being patient and waiting.
Look, I'll get upset if it's March 1st and this is the roster. Like, if
oh yeah, no, very right? much so. But right now, I'm okay with,
oh yeah, for sure,
with not being hyper aggressive. I mean, and it feels like right now it's like the Office meme. Everybody's got the little guns out.
Yeah, I honestly look at what Baltimore just did. So they pretty much had their offer on the table to Schwarber, which it seems like it was the same as what Philly ended up matching. So yeah. 5 years, $150 million. And I think that would have been a perfect fit for the Orioles. Big lefty bopper in the middle of their lineup. He's probably one of the top 5 or 10 bats in baseball. And they have a DH spot open. So they could just put him at the DH, just let him mash at 45, maybe 50 homers in that park. It's so small to right field. And they missed out on him. And then they ended up, as soon as they missed out on him, apparently the Pete Alonso deal came together within 24 hours after that. Pete ended up going to Orlando, going up to meet with some of the teams. And he ended up getting 5 years, $155 million. And we talk about patience. The Orioles, they did not have that patience. They didn't have the restraint. They said, we have this $150 million offer we just proposed, and we were just going to throw that offer, the exact same offer, at Pete Alonso. And I don't think that's a great contract. If you look at what Josh Naylor got from the Mariners, he got like 60% of what Alonso got. And do you think Pete Alonso is that much better than Josh Naylor? I don't. So I think the patience is important. That I don't think we should be going out there and spending just for the sake of spending, because it could end up badly.
I also think when it comes to Bellinger, like, the equivalent of this would be saying, all right, Boris, you win. Here's 7 years for Bellinger. I'm not saying traditionally I would rather my team in a contention window overpay than not get the player and not have a good roster for the upcoming season. But I don't believe going with, like, Dominguez and Hayes is worse than giving Bellinger 7 years. I would rather have a platoon in left field than pay Cody Bellinger 7 years, $200 million.
Yes, I agree with that. And also, I think we have to mention, Boris has done this in the past with his free agents. He did it with Bellinger 2 years ago. And he'll wait on his guys. And sometimes it comes back to bite him in the ass, and they end up taking a short-term deal. So if we're playing the staring contest with Boris, there's no need to blink in December.
No, and it happened last year with Bregman and with Pete Alonso. Both of them, like Boris thought he had everybody, you know, dead to rights, and everyone just waited it out. And then, I mean
it's paid out. It's paid off for some of his guys long term, because, like, what Alonso just did, he ended up making some good money in the second contract. But I mean, Bellinger's hitting the market pretty much having the same season that he did 2 years ago, except now he's 2 years older. So it's like, what has he proven? He's proven he could repeat that performance a little bit, but it's like he's shown a higher ceiling, like, and the floor is still pretty low. I think the same concerns are still kind of surrounding him. Now he's 2 years older than he was when he got the pillow contract in the first place.
And I also think when it comes to the Bellinger market, what teams paid for in Schwarber and Alonso is a more stable skill on a year-to-year basis, and that's offense. And I would also say for Alonso, like, I wouldn't hand out that contract. Like, if I was a Met fan, I'd go, all right, this sucks, but I wouldn't have paid him that. For Schwarber, I'm not sure I would pay that, but he's an elite hitter, and that is a more stable skill on a year-to-year basis than defense. Bellinger a year ago was a good, not great defensive corner outfielder. This year, an elite defensive corner outfielder. Could always go back to just being good. And then you go from this, all right, if he has a 120 OPS plus, easy 4-5 war player to, it's like a 3 war player. He could be below average for a year and be a 2.5 war player.
I don't think you expect his defense to just stay here forever, because he's entering his 30s now. Like, I think you're expecting it to regress, if anything.
it also is the probably the skill that you could argue gets the most directly affected by these small nagging injuries. If we look at Trent Grisham when he pulled his hammy, you could visually see how, you know, turbo, you know what, he was out there in center field. For Volpe, he has the injury, diving for that ball, and defensively, like, you could see it in his throws, you could see it in kind of him, his body, like, he's throwing everything out there just to make those throws and make those plays. Defense isn't as sticky of a skill on a year-to-year basis. Defensive metrics aren't as accurate as offensive metrics are at capturing hitting value. So I don't necessarily view Bellinger as the kind of guy that, like, hey, the market is dying for this guy. Every report, every time a guy signs, and I'm like, okay, the teams who wanted this player, they could pivot to Bellinger. Every report comes out, it's like, no, they're not really that in. Like, the Mets were the team. I thought the Mets, that would be the team. Mm-hmm. Very clearly, when they lost Alonso, like, they are going to sign Cody Bellinger. And in within, like, 2 or 3 hours, it's, yeah, the Mets aren't really, like, aggressive at the top of the market. More on the trade market. Very opportunistic. Those aren't the words of a team that's going to kick your ass for Bellinger. And why would David Stearns not pay for Edwin Diaz beyond 3 years, not pay 5 years for Alonso, trade away Brandon Nimmo, and then go, here's 6 or 7 years at $180 million for Cody Bellinger? That feels like that would be something as a Met fan, yeah, you could kind of slam your GM for and go, what is wrong with you? Like, what happened to let's make smart, analytically inclined free agent decisions? I don't know how you guys feel. I do want to ask, hand it off like this. We'll start with Chris here. If there was a big threat in your mind for Bellinger, who's your, like, biggest threat to the Yankees for landing Cody Bellinger at this point?
I don't even know if I have an apparent biggest threat. I mean, for me, I was kind of with you. I thought it was going to be the Mets immediately. It's like, as soon as you see Pete Alonso go, it's like, okay, like, he's going to the Mets. Like, it's like, let me get ready for it. Obviously, like, they, you know, Devin Williams and Cody Bellinger, they're Mets now. And kind of seeing how that didn't come to fruition. I mean, I don't think the Dodgers, like, I don't think Toronto, and it's like, those are like the big spenders that are going to be willing to maybe hit that $200 million mark. So I don't really have such a big threat. I mean, for me, Bellinger is a Yankee. If the Yankees want Bellinger to be a Yankee, it's Scott Boras's price. And that's kind of it.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think I kind of fell for the Scott Boras media propaganda machine entering the winter meetings, because when I was, like, on my way down there, I thought that Bellinger would be the big domino off the board this week, just based on what we were hearing, like, last week, the week before that. Pretty much every team, it seemed like all the mid-market teams, all the big market teams, they were in on Bellinger. Like, we were hearing Dodgers, we were hearing Mets, we were hearing Blue Jays, we were hearing everybody. And now it's dried up. We haven't heard anything all week besides Bellinger and Boras want 7 years, and no one wants to give them 7 years.
I think my answer would be the Blue Jays if they don't get Tucker or Bichette. Is that, like,
I mean, that's a big if, though. I think they're right. I think they're 99% getting at least one of Bichette or Tucker.
I'd still be stunned if Bichette leaves.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, and so I'm going to kind of, like, I'll throw another team. Like, the Angels do something really stupid.
I could see that.
$180 million.
Speaking of which, I just put out my Angels video, so go watch that after this. But yeah, that would be the prototypical Angels 9-figure contract that ages very poorly. So
I figured, I thought there was a chance you'd say the Angels just because of the video dropping today, which is why I had another answer even prepared with the Rockies. I was like, what, Rockies, like, decent? But
that would be Rockies. That's the thing. That's what I think everyone right now, all these smart teams, they're looking at this and they're like, yeah, that would be a move that the Angels make. So should we do it? I don't think so.
Right. And so from kind of what I've kind of dug around, and, you know, I'm not Jeff Passan. I'm not, you know, Jeff Passan, different level of this. Dodgers, from my understanding, they're not willing to go to even 4 years, 5 years. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the public reports for the Mets, that's not an indication of, like, hey, we'll go to 6 or 7 years. The Phillies, yeah,
he's done it twice, and me and that baseball, bro, just look at each other like, is he going to do it?
The Phillies with Schwarber, I forget who reported, I think it was their beat writer on MLB.com, was like, if they sign Schwarber and sign Realmuto, they're basically done free agency. I don't believe. It would be weird if it's like Realmuto and or Cody Bellinger. That'd be really weird if your price range went from about like a $20, $30 million contract to a $150 million contract.
Yeah, right? And also, so they need a catcher. They can make it work with the outfield easier than just going out and spending a 6-year deal on Bellinger. So I think it doesn't really make sense fit-wise given their financial situation and their needs.
Do they want JC?
Oh, dude, I would love it. I'd love to swing them their way. I don't know. Who do you want back from them for JC?
Could you get like one of their Renso relievers for big if he was a starter? Like, I don't think that would work though.
Yeah.
It's not enough value for them.
It would depend. It would depend how they perceive him. If they really think he's going to be a really good catcher, then
maybe give him a prospect. You know, I like the celebration's tough. Like, I'm kind of upset he's not right-handed.
Yeah, I agree.
LDR and Ascara. Good vibes, dude. All that stuff, but Jacob, I kind of wanted to hand now. I think this is now your time to just kind of shine in this episode because
yes.
You were at the winter meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the insight, what you were hearing, not only with the Yankees, just in general. Kind of give us the notebook, man.
Yeah, so there wasn't too much Yankee stuff going on, as we know. I think there'd be more stuff out there. Like, pretty much what I know about the Yankees is what you know about the Yankees, just from being on Twitter. But I did get some good notes from just from murmurs I heard. I tweeted out, I'm hearing murmurs. I was hearing murmurs. I wasn't bullshitting there. I did hear some murmurs. So the first thing I wanted to say was I talked to a Japanese reporter, and they said that Okamoto and Amai are both in play for both New York teams. And there's been some conflicting reports about who's interested in them. It seems to me like Okamoto's getting the most interest out of all the Japanese free agents. I think everyone kind of wants that, like a righty bat who hits velo very well, has good contact rates, and can hit for some power. Amai, on the other hand, he's going to demand such a big deal that, again, it's kind of like, I'm not going to say it's like the Tucker market, but it's to the point where some teams aren't even going to be able to afford him. So he does have a good market from Mets, Yankees, probably even the Phillies. Like, I don't know. There's going to be a lot of teams that on both these guys. So I just want to get your guys' thoughts on both of those two and where we're at with them right now.
Chris, we'll start with you. Why don't you give me your thoughts first?
I mean, both would be awesome. I'm really in on Amai if the years end up lining up. It is funny, though, because I feel like Okamoto's kind of gone silent a little bit over the last, like, week or so in terms of, like, who's in play for him. What do you think the dollar amount would be for Okamoto, out of curiosity, in this baseball?
Going into this, I thought it would be sort of like the Yoshida contract, which I think was $585 or $590, and also Suzuki, Seiya Suzuki, mm-hmm. because Suzuki, Yoshida, and Okamoto all had very, very similar walk years leaving MPB, and they're all very similar ages coming out. And they also had similar concerns with defense. I think Okamoto is even a little bit of a better defender than the other two. So I could see him getting probably around 100, if not even a little bit above 100, best case scenario. And given that he's a righty bat and a lot of teams in contention right now do need a righty bat.
Like, New York, I mean, the Yankees need a righty bat in the worst
yeah.
way.
Like, I think
completely into paying Okamoto like what, yeah. $500 million. Like, I'd be in.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a report out that says that he'd be okay accepting a slightly smaller role with the Yankees, whether it's being a platoon third base, getting some work in left field, getting some work at first base. So that would be interesting if we sign him. But he's a perfect fit for Boston, if you ask me, especially yeah. that they missed out on Pete. They were definitely in on him. That's what all the reports were saying. Apparently, Breslow met with Pete in private. And he missed his media scrum because he was sick, quote unquote. And then it turns out Alonso was there that night and he met with him. But then they missed out on him. They definitely need a big righty bat in the lineup. And first base is iffy with Casas being hurt the last couple of years. So I definitely think if we're going to be in on Okamoto, we're going to have to beat out Boston for him.
Yeah, I also want to note real quick, very minor signing, but Jacob, I know this is like one of your guys. Lane Thomas just signed with the Royals, so
no,
yeah,
no.
That's a cheap player I would have wanted. Like I kind of, damn. I will say like if the Yankees signed Bellinger, the need for a right-handed outfielder isn't that great because Bellinger mm-hmm. just plays every day, ideally. But just a small note there. In the regard of Okamoto, though. I think he'd be awesome as this like rovering piece. The Yankees, I think the value of their 10th position player is greater than a Med Rosario. Like, I don't think yeah. it can be a Med Rosario. And the reason I say that is because Stan's going to get hurt. Stan played 77 games this past year. You can set the over under at 77 games if you want. I think it's a little bit conservative. I'd set it closer to 100. But point is, you're going to have at least 50 games of DH time to have him play. You'll have time to let him play right field if you bring, especially if you bring in Bellinger, because Bellinger can play left, Grisham can play center, and Okamoto can definitely play right field. Dude, again, I keep referencing 2022 Matt Carpenter. That guy played nearly 100 innings in right field. Anyone can play right field.
Yeah,
you can put anybody out there. They put Ikeff in center. Like, come on,
I mean,
I don't care.
Stan was out there in right field this year when Judge was coming yes. back, so anyone can play right field. In regards to like Rosario, I do think. A guy like Rosario, I'd like to have him on the roster, but it's like I feel like that doesn't fit a 162-game season. That's a guy you trade for at the deadline, which yeah. is what we did. So I do agree. I think we need to fill out the bench with guys who are more versatile, who give us more on both offense and defense. I think Okamoto does that.
I agree. And when it comes to Imai, I will say I'm kind of – I don't know where I'm at with Imai because the trade market pitching-wise seems to be a little more expansive than I thought it would be. I'm enticed by guys like Gore. I'm definitely enticed by a Freddy Peralta if he were to get moved, although, again, like logistically, why, right? Like the question for the Brewers isn't – the question is why. Why would you trade
I don't. Peralta? I don't think he'd get traded. I really – just from a logic perspective, I don't see why they would trade off – a really solid number two starter who's making $8 million this year. They have plenty of prospects. They don't really need to trade off talent right now. They're a really good team. Like, they're going to be contending this year.
It's also kind of a problem trade for the Yankees. Like, it's not a good fit for a trade partner because the things they need would be, like, shortstop. Is Jose Caballero, like can you really trade a shortstop at all? And Oswaldo Cabrera is, like, expendable, but he's not helping you get Freddy Peralta.
I mean, the comments are going to tell you that we should go sign Bichette and then trade Volpe for Freddy Peralta, but that's never going to happen in a million years. So
it's also like, if you think Volpe's utter trash, why would you be able to get Freddy Peralta for him is the other part of that conversation. It's kind of like everyone does this with trades. Just go trade this guy who I think sucks for a good player. And it's like,
it's Andujar and Frazier syndrome.
Right. I mean, I it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, Peralta's a product of this too, where it's like, why didn't they trade him? He clearly sucks. It's like,
well, that's why they don't trade him, because he clearly sucks.
Yeah, only the Angels would take him.
To play first base. To play first base.
Hey, he also pitched an inning.
He did. I think he had better pitching numbers than hitting numbers this year, actually.
Well, I think he gave up a home run.
Yeah, he still had better pitching numbers than hitting numbers this year.
Pride.
That guy, that is the definition. The phrase turbo has come from the tweet. I'm sure you guys have seen it. The one where it's like, if you see former first-round pick attached to him, blah, blah, blah. Former top 100 prospect Oswald Peraza.
Yeah, exactly.
Just the vibes there, no bueno. But regards to the Japanese market, I think it'll be interesting to see how those guys land. What else you got for us?
Yeah, I want to segue into my next point, which is Ketel Marte. I've seen a lot of Yankees fans talking about how we should trade for Ketel Marte. I don't think that fit makes any sense for us. We have Jazz Chisholm at second base, at least for one more year. I'd hope to extend him, but moving, like, people are suggesting trading Jazz and trading for Marte. I don't think that makes any sense. There's too many hoops to jump through to get that done. And Marte is also going to cost the Kings ransom. But the thing I did hear about Marte is that there's a very, very, very good chance he's going to be traded. Like, I'm talking 99%. And a few weeks ago, I didn't think that was the case. I thought that was more wishful thinking on behalf of the fan bases that wanted to see him on their teams. And I've heard that behind the scenes, the stuff with him missing games and the stuff with the clubhouse stuff that he's had reported about him, it's even worse than we know about publicly. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Marte traded, like, pretty soon, within the next couple of weeks. And I'm pretty worried about that because I think he fits a lot of the rosters in our division. Toronto, if they don't bring back Bichette, could put Marte at second and have Jimenez swing the shortstop. I think that would be a fucking perfect fit for that lineup. But I'm even more concerned about Boston. Boston's been in deep talks for Marte all week. I really think that's a great fit for them. They really need a righty masher. He's a switch hitter, but they really need someone who can hit lefties. And I don't know what they would do with their infield, because then that kind of leaves Marcelo Meyer out without a position. But I think that would make sense, a lot of sense from Boston's POV.
I mean, wouldn't Marcelo need to be a part of that deal, though, anyway?
He might be, but I think Arizona definitely would be interested in their starting pitching prospects more than anything. So I don't know what the deal would look like exactly, but that would start to scare me a bit in terms of Boston's lineup if they added a Ketel Marte right in the middle of it.
I think what scares me with Ketel Marte the most is the fact that when we talk about what it means for the Red Sox, like, it is a way to get a star bat and not exclude yourself from the rest of free agency if you choose to continue to go down that path. Now, I will say the copium I'm taking here is that the pessimism around the Red Sox landing in the last, like, 24 hours seems to be growing. But I wouldn't even take stock into that, because just as quickly as you can go from, bless you, did I screw it up? Oh, I messed it up. I messed up the sneeze. I'm an a-hole. I'm a prick. I suck.
You got to wait for the second one always.
That's
my
horrible.
Bad, my bad.
That's a horrible look for you, Ryan.
That's people, terrible. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Your reputation's down the gutter now.
I'm canceled. It's over. It's over. It's over. But with Marte, like, he's not so expensive financially, but for the Yankees, like, do people realize that that's your only move trade-wise if you get him? Like, you can't do anything else in trade market. You're not going to sign both an outfielder and a starting pitcher. And I don't, again, like, it costs so much, you can really argue you can't do that. You can go that far. Unless you're trading Cam Schlittler and Ben Rice, maybe. And, like, you know, like, you're getting to a point where you're trading so much that you now have to pay to make up for those things. And, like, it just doesn't, in my opinion, make sense for the Yankees, for the Red Sox, who, let's be honest, look, they got, like, a million MLB-quality pitchers, a lot of them in the farm system, some of them at the major league level. They can do that. And it's a strength they have that you don't, or at least a strength that they have to a degree that you don't. So, is what it is. Like, that is what it is. Hopefully, the issue is that the other alternative here seems like to be like the Rays, and no, I don't want that either. I think, yeah, I want it maybe more than the Red Sox, because I think the Rays are worse than the Red Sox.
I saw that report that it would have been like, what was it, Boz and another starting pitcher, but it was like Boz and Pepio for Marte, and I'm like, I mean, if they go and do that, who's going to be starting games for them? So I think that's like, They don't worry me that much, especially considering the other teams right now. The Rays are probably at the bottom of the list in terms of who I'm worried of in our division, so I'm not losing too much sleep over that rumor.
That's fair. I would prefer it over the Red Sox. Let's be very clear. I'd prefer this over Los Red Sox. It's not even close to me, but I still wouldn't like it. I mean, I can't believe everyone in the AL East. Are you serious? Like, everyone in the AL East wants to do something now? Are you serious? Yeah. Like, I can't rest in this division. Oh, you can't.
Passan, after Alonso signed, Passan put out a tweet. He was like, "Is this one of the? This might be one of the best lineups in baseball this year." And it's like, I don't know about that, but Baltimore is back into more serious conversation this year. I think they're definitely going to bounce back.
It's just like the division's good, man. You can have good. You might have five above 500 teams in this year. I wouldn't be stunned by that. Like, yeah, that is,
it's always good, man. There's never any rest for us.
What is, like, okay, how many AL East teams, how many non-AL East AL teams are you taking over, like, the top four, I guess, at this point? I say the Rays are fifth, pretty comfortably right now. But, like, I would say the Mariners and, like, maybe the Tigers on the Orioles, but that's it? Am I crazy?
Dude, the Tigers, if the Tigers move off Scooble, I don't, like, it might just be the Mariners, man. And then Houston, you never know, because they were hurt all last year. Maybe they bounce back. But, yeah, nobody in the Central is – I've talked about the Central before. Like, come on, man. Like, let's grow up here.
Turbo, bro. Just
Turbo.
No one – like, if we played in – if we played in the AL Central, like, we'd be doing what the Braves did in the 90s and early 2000s. We'd be 16 consecutive division titles, some shit like that. This is BS. Any other notes we should note here? That was a terrible sentence, but go right ahead.
I mean, I could get into our next topic if no one else has anything on Marte.
Let's roll into it. Let's get into it, man.
So the other thing I heard, I think it has been reported as well, is that there is a small chance that Toronto does go out and get Tucker and Bo. And the whole, just the concept of Toronto being this aggressive, even after going and signing Cease, and they've been in all these relievers that are signing now. They were in on Robert Suarez, apparently. So how do you guys feel about them? Are you, like, really – I'm scared of them right now because they were so good this year, and they've already added it, and they look like they're going to keep adding.
I mean, they have to – the Yankees, look, you shouldn't I don't think – like, I'm going to say this, and, like, I need people to not freak out at me when I say this. You shouldn't make decisions based on panic, fear, emotion, all those things. That's how you make bad business decisions. At the end of the day, it's a business. With that being said, the reason the Yankees should be aggressive in this market, trade, free agent, whatever you want to call it, is because they have a good team. The yeah. fact that the Yankees have a good roster, this is not a bad roster, it's not a bad team. This team won 94 games and should have probably won more if they didn't have a million stupid, dumb plays against the Blue Jays. They saved all of their worst defensive performances for one opponent and a couple of times against the Red Sox. You need to reinforce this good roster. You have a team that's more than capable of winning the American League and winning the World Series and kind of going from there. But if the Blue Jays, as you noted, go out and load up on position player talent, it makes it very hard to, like, they are a team that you might have to be you might have had to catch from the start of the offseason. Versus, like, the Orioles, you know, they're catching up to you. I think the Red Sox are catching up to you, although they're closer than the Orioles were. You have to, by the end of this offseason, have a better offseason than the Blue Jays to be better than them, in my opinion. That is, I don't think that's hyperbole. You have to have the better offseason or the more impactful offseason, I think, to go into the year as the favorite over them.
No,
not by a massive margin, but by a margin.
Well, it's because, like, the general feeling right now for New York is that, like, we should be chasing the Dodgers, right? And I think Toronto, because they were just in the World Series in a Game 7 that close, I think their sentiment is, okay, like, we can spend and get us over, get ourselves over the hump. You don't want it to feel like you got to chase the Blue Jays. You just don't want it to feel like that.
Yeah, especially considering they've already made the Cease move. They've already made a splash. So it's like, I don't know if there's a world where realistically you look back at the offseason as a whole and we did more than them. But this, from this point on, we have to do more than them going forward to be the number one team in the AL East going into next year.
I want to ask about the Blue Jays rotation, though, with Cease. Do you feel like they may have been that aggressive for Cease because Shane Bieber is, like, so up in the air right now for them?
Yeah, I definitely think his injury speculation, obviously we don't know what it is, but it seems like he played hurt at the end of last year and his risk is very high, which is why he opted in. So
they said he's got some pretty bad forearm tightness.
Yeah.
Tommy John. So it's like, like no wonder he didn't hit free agency. Like, he picked up that contract. Mm-hmm. He's playing with that and really not talking that much about it. Like, that could be part of the reason they were so aggressive to get Cease.
Yeah, that's probably why they got a Ponce as well, because they need to fill out the back end in case Bieber goes down. But yeah, they've already patched that hole, though, which is, I guess, why Yankees fans are kind of frustrated right now. They're going out, they're looking out at Toronto, and they're seeing a team that just beat us in the division, beat us in the playoffs, and almost won the World Series, and they're being more aggressive than us. So I get the frustration right now.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's one of those things where I don't think you should – like, I think it's premature to do the whole offseason's over, this team sucks, Hal Steinbrenner, Brian Cashman, pulled the curtains over our eyes, like, whatever expression you want to use to talk about how this offseason's over, this team sucks, whatever. But there's pressure for sure. Like, that doesn't eliminate pressure. Yeah. It doesn't make it so there shouldn't be expectations. And no, I shouldn't think the Yankee fan – I don't think the Yankee fan should ever stop thinking, hey, I want to be the best team in baseball. We are the Yankees. I think that arrogance and that is what it means to be a Yankee fan. I'm sorry. I think that is one of my, like, very fan, WFAN, old person, whatever you want to call it, takes that I think the Yankee fan should never waver from their expectation of, we're Apple, so we're gonna be. We are Apple. We are the creme de la creme. We are the flagship franchise of baseball.
Yeah,
that should be the expectation constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's not that, not to say that you should be livid every time, but yeah, there's a little twinge of disappointment. There's something that will always feel empty about the fact that the Dodgers kind of keep one upping you. Now it is kind of. I'm gonna say this as well. It is kind of funny that, like, you know, the other team that has more money than you lost their two top incumbent free agents. Like, I can't lie, I do find that a little bit funny, but I can't laugh until the Yankees do something. It's kind of my also mindset of this. So
yeah, I think it's. Yeah. I understand the frustration. I don't agree with it right now. But if Toronto goes out and signs Kyle Tucker and we're still haven't done anything big, then I would start to feel that myself.
Yeah, yeah. I'm at the point where it's like, all right, dude, like. I just want to make sure that we're better. I just want to make sure, like, you got to check the boxes. It's the other thing, too. If you're not going to sign Tucker, you can't go into the season doing like what you did last year. You didn't have a third baseman. Like, that's – come on. If you have less work to do, which I do agree with, I think the Yankees, yes, they have less work to do as a roster. They have fewer black holes on their roster than they did at the end of 2024. Their left fielder was awful and then hit free agency. That was Verdugo. Their first baseman was awful and then hit free agency. They needed to upgrade in the rotation. They wanted to upgrade their bullpen. They needed to replace Juan freaking Soto or sign Juan Soto. They ended up having to replace him. Like, they had a million things they had to do. This one kind of feels like, all right, starting outfielder, starting pitcher, doesn't have to be a Max Fried caliber starting pitcher. That's another note. Reliever, right-handed bat. Give me those four things. Two of those things can come for very cheap. Two of those things can combine. The bench bat and the bullpen arm could combine for like $5, $6 million. Mm-hmm. You got to make sure that you got to make sure you check all those boxes. There is no reason, and honestly no acceptable reason, why you don't do all four, unless, of course, you sign Kyle Tucker and then you're like, all right, well, maybe we don't need a right-handed bench bat. Maybe we'll just, like, BS it and hype up Jose Caballero as this lefty mashing demon, which he does hit lefties well. But, like, I'm willing to do it for that, but not for Bellinger. Bellinger, no, you sure as hell better cover all those boxes, or else I'm not gonna be happy about that.
Yeah, I would assume if we do go out and get Tucker, the only, like, MI is probably dead. If we go out and get Tucker, I'd assume it would be either or at this point, and then maybe we could still be in play for a Mackenzie Gore via trade because he just won't cost as much. But Yeah, I definitely think we still have plenty of options. We have so many different directions we can go with this offseason, so I wouldn't be panicked yet. But if Toronto does go out and make one of those big moves, I would start to be like, oh, when are we going to step up and match them, you know?
Yeah. Again, it's look at the board. If you're a Yankee FO person and you had a board, maybe Robert Suarez was on it. Maybe. I'm not in love with Robert Suarez.
Yeah, I honestly don't like that contract. That's the least favorite of the reliever contract so far. I was a little bit upset.
Devin at that price.
Yeah, whatever. Devin at that exact price at 3 years younger and as a better pitcher, in my opinion, that's looks like a steal for the Mets right now. People are like thunking on the Mets. I think the Mets got the best reliever contract so far out of the multi-year deals. I also think the Gregory Soto deal was pretty good. I was kind of upset we were in players in that because I would have liked him for our bullpen, but I digress.
Is it fair to say that Devin Williams might be the player slash contract? That it's funny because I felt like that same way with Clay Holmes if he were to sign as a reliever, whereas like the scorned Yankee relievers, the best contract of the offseason probably, or one of the best.
I mean, it looks like the best reliever contract, so yeah.
That's like, the market inefficiency. Just get scored Yankee relievers. Like, if the Yankees, I don't know if David Bednar shits the bed this year, go sign him if you're the Mets.
Well, just get whoever the Yankees fans are bullying the most. You're going to be getting them on a good deal. So I guess that's why you got to go trade for Volpe right now if you're an opposing team.
I actually think if you could trade for Volpe on a discount in this shortstop market, you should. I think you should.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a crazy take? Like,
no, I think I – for nothing? I mean, I still think Volpe's going to be really good. The Yankees aren't going to give him away for free because of that, because they're a smart team. But if the Yankees weren't a smart team, they would give Volpe away, and then Volpe would go to wherever, and he'd be a really good player. And then fans would be like, oh, why'd you trade Volpe away?
Anthony Volpe's the only guy – if you were to move, he'd be the best player who ends up playing shortstop in 2026.
Yes, he'd finally have the Bobby Witt breakout season.
I don't even think it's like a breakout. He would just like you just the reset is pretty easy. It's just glove gets better from where it was this past year, goes back to career norms, and that's it. He plays enough games where he's a valuable player. Like that's really that's the fix. I don't know if there's a necessary fix there.
So low, like he'd be selling so low, he'd have to be better next year.
Right. And again, the shortstop market's terrible. Like this is I will say this too. Like, I don't think the Yankees are like, oh, we're keeping Volpe solely because we just are so in love with him. I'm sure, like, that report came out, they checked in on Seager. Obviously, Seager isn't probably getting traded, but the Yankees would move on from Volpe for a clear and defined upgrade.
Right.
That player doesn't exist right now. And please do not tell me about Bichette. He cannot play shortstop. That guy can't move. Like, don't. No.
Yeah,
no.
If people didn't like Volpe's defense, goodness.
People didn't like Gleyber at shortstop. And, like, there were years where Gleyber hit and couldn't field there. And, like, come on.
I will say, I think Gleyber and Bichette as players are much closer in terms of talent and archetype than people are willing to acknowledge.
I would agree. And I would agree to, like,
I think I see Gleyber as like 80% of Bichette, and he's gonna make he's on the qualifying offer right now. He's gonna make a lot less than Bichette. He's gonna make less than 50% of what Bichette's gonna make.
Gleyber Torres is that great value product you buy from Walmart and you prefer it over the main brand.
Yes.
You're like, yes, because look, you know when you pay less for something, you're gonna get a worse.
I think that's another going back. It's the scoring Yankee thing. It's what it's all it is, man. You just like you gotta have the Yankees fans kill you enough our teams are gonna. That's literally a market inefficiency right now. Go out and get the guys who the Yankees fans hate.
Torres produced 2.61, a $12 million contract. That is another the two best contracts you could argue signed this past offseason were guys that Yankee fans hated. Basically forced out of town.
I was so upset we didn't bring him back last year.
That contract was a steal.
Mm-hmm.
With all the mistakes, it was a steal. Like, I'm sorry. It just is. But any final notes? I know we have, a Rule 5 draft pick in Cade Winquest, but I think the TLDR there is just he throws gas. I did hear some good things about, what he could be with the Yankees, but, yeah, man, that's kind of where I'm at. He throws hard. That's
I just want to confirm, is this a Rule 5 major league pick?
Like yes.
Okay.
So he must be on their 40-man roster, their first one since 2011. Funnily enough, what happened in 2011 quarterback-wise? I couldn't find the draw. Not going to lie, guys. I didn't have it. Nope. I had the layup, but I couldn't.
2011 quarterbacks? I mean, I can tell you who Ohio State's quarterback was that year. Braxton Miller.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I actually think I know that name, too.
Yeah.
Eli won his second Super Bowl that year.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be Eli's Super Bowl, too. On the way, he beat Aaron Rodgers on the way there. Mario Manningham was on the –
That was my first ever sports wager I made. I mean, I was at like the lunch table with all my friends, and I have Patriots fan friends. I bet everyone at the table $20 that the Giants would win, and it was 1-to-1 odds. So I was taking terrible odds. If I just put all that money on the sports book, if I had Fat Tony, if I called him up, I said, give me 3-to-1 for the Giants to win, I could have made a ton more. But yeah. It was a friendly bet, 1-to-1, and I made like $100 the next day. So that was cool.
I did really well in a bet. I bet with my brother that OKC would win the finals going into the year. Not going into the postseason, essentially 1-to-1 odds as well. Which, yeah, easy. I kind of had a couple heart attacks, but easy breezy. Yeah, totally easy.
I'm looking at WinQuest's page right now. Is this a guy that could profile as a reliever? Yeah. Because he was starting in the minors, and he's got some good ratios. Like, he's got a decent strikeout to walk for a starter, and he obviously throws cheese. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised this guy. I don't know, but he did. He only just got to double A this year. That's probably what it is.
He has a really good feel for spin. The spin rates are really good on all of his pitches. He seems to be a guy who moves the ball well away from righties to the righty. So high spin, kind of a supernator. Yeah, it's kind of the Yankees' bread and butter. Like, this is a guy the Yankees just – and a low release. I think it's a 5.3 release height. So poor shaping is like 13 inches IVB, somewhere in that range. Make him a reliever, probably see him sit closer to his max velo than his average, which is around 95.
Yeah.
That's going to bump up the IVB a little bit. If he's around like a 14 vert, 96 mile per hour fastball, 5.3 release, soup up the secondaries, that's a good reliever.
The walks aren't out of control, which is nice for someone who has the stuff. So, I mean, this looks like a good find. I'm kind of surprised the Cardinals didn't protect him, given that their roster isn't that overloaded with talent right now.
And we didn't lose anybody. This is like, this was the weirdest Rule 5 draft ever. We got somebody and didn't lose anybody. This is an anomaly.
Yeah. Every year, I feel like we lose a couple.
Yankees lost no R5 picks and picked up one. Hashtag recession indicator. Is that what that is? this is scary. Like, this is like weird times for the Yankees in the R5.
Wait, who else? But, I saw didn't we sign another reliever to a minor league deal or something?
I don't have the, I think it's like Bradley Hanner.
Bradley
Hanner, yes, Cleveland guy,
triple A, double A last year, I believe.
Big sweeper, I think it's like 20 lateral, 20 horizontal. Big, that's beautiful, but the velo is underwhelming.
Too. Yeah, underwhelming velo, but like the Guardians velo is always underwhelming. But a big kid.
Hey, hopefully he does the Brent Hedrick, which is just start throwing 3 miles per hour harder. What do we think?
Yeah, I mean he was 29% strikeout rate in triple A this past year, so it might be something there. Who knows?
I don't know why more people just don't throw 3 miles per hour harder.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, this guy's 6'4". He could. Like, he should be able to. Why not?
Yeah. It's just not hard. It's just not hard. Like, Schlittler just did it. Hedrick just did it. Yeah,
just like unlocked it overnight. Like, he just got up here in, like, 98, 99. Bam. Yeah.
I actually genuinely don't know how Schlittler was sitting 89 a few years ago, despite being 6'13" and with a 12-foot wingspan.
Dude, I'm still blown away by it.
I'm very glad we have regular PED testing, so I have to freak out about that every single day. Like, 'cause I'll be honest, like, if we didn't have it, I'd freak out about that every single day.
Dude, yeah, like, he was sitting 95, like, in the middle of the year last year.
He was sitting 95. Like, it's different if he showed up to camp throwing harder.
Well, I mean,
he was sitting 95 in camp.
It's not like he bulked up. He just, like, I don't know. He must have figured something out mechanically.
There's no
just
way
changed
he
the grip.
Just
changed the grip. just change the grip.
Sorry,
that's all he did, kids.
Yeah, I'm gonna segue very quickly off that. WinQuest, he's a guy. I think he's a dude. All you have to do is if he doesn't make the team out of camp, I think the Yankees pay $100,000 to the Cardinals and then just return him to the roster. So that's chump change. That's nothing. Totally acceptable risk to take, guys. I want to give you guys a little bit of like a fun way to end this. Who is the first player, who's the next player the Yankees go a major league contract to? And do you think it happens before the next time we record? Jacob, we'll start with you.
That's tough. You're putting me on the spot here. Next time, before we record, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't sign anyone until, like, until after Christmas. That wouldn't surprise me. But I don't know, because the way the outfield market seems like it's pretty stagnant, and I don't think Imai is going to sign probably until right before his window closes. I think it's on January 3rd. So I'm going to say no on that, but I'm going to say the next major league contract is Imai.
All right.
In early January.
Next Yankee. Yeah, the next Yankee is Ryan Garcia. Get ready, big dog. Get ready to learn Bronx.
I said this, and I stand by it. If I threw 90-plus miles per hour in high school, I would be a big leaguer. I would be a I would be a dog. If
you'll
I had,
be a big leaguer by next week.
Yeah, and if you had wheels, you'd be a bike.
Yeah, if I was a good, if I was good at baseball, I'd be in the big leagues.
I mean, if you're how tall are you? Like 5 foot four? Like
5 foot eight? Yes.
If 5 foot four, right?
Don't
so
spreading the rumor.
If you were throwing 90, if you were throwing 90 at that size, at Ken Rosenthal size, then I think teams would be looking at you. They'd be like, "Wow, how this is the next Pedro Martinez?"
No, bro, I'd be I'd be a dog. I'm letting you know right now. I'd be a dog.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be talking. I'd be in the Yankee bullpen. We'd be talking as an interview. I'd be doing this as an interview. Trust me.
There would be no rising star in the Yankees beat at age 21. Interviewing Cashman at his sleepover event.
Dude, I think the best part is that I didn't have to like look up to him and their interview. Where like most players I have to interview, I have to do that for.
Is Cashman short king?
Cashman's like roughly my height. He's really? Roughly my height.
I don't know. I always assumed he was a little bit more. I guess maybe the way they set him up on TV, they make him look like a mob boss or something. But
I will also say this. He is so kind. Like, I got to be honest. After that event, I was like, I don't understand, like, if you're a media guy and you have, like, an axe to grind with this dude. Like, you can, unless you're – because if you're a fan, it's different. You're a fanatic. But if you're a reporter, writer, like, if you hate this – I really don't know how you can hate the guy.
Yeah,
like,
and I think the Yankees in general handle the media very well based on what I saw at the winter meetings and some of my friends who were frustrated with their own teams, the teams that they cover, how they handle the media. So I think it's like the Yankees are the gold standard in terms of that type of stuff. So I think that's very cool to be part of that that fan base.
And to kind of wrap my prediction for who signs with the Yankees, MLB contract, it will happen before we come on the show. The Yankees will sign. They'll sign. I think they'll sign like a random reliever, and that random reliever is going to be. They'll bring back Tim Mesa on a 1 year, $3 million contract. That's my prediction. They'll sign Tim Mesa on a 1 year, $3 million.
The lefty I'm looking for.
And the reason I say that is because we're gonna have to sit on here and talk about it and have to talk fans off a cliff because they signed somebody to an insignificant contract.
Well, that's why I thought about the minor league deal we just did with whatever his name is, because everyone was freaking out about that on Twitter. They said, "Oh, he's dumpster diving." Well, it's like who cares?
You gotta
do that sometimes.
I don't know, man. Like, I think I've become more annoyed with Yankee offseason discourse than I, like, this is the most annoyed I've ever been with it.
It's getting so bad. It's like, I see a Fire Cashman tweet every day, and it's like, it's December, you're that stressed out about the Yankees? Calm down.
There was a report that got people going that said, and I quote, "The Yankees are making offers that teams and players are not liking." No shit, they haven't signed anybody. No shit. No shit. Like, breaking news. The New York Yankees have not given Cody Bellinger the offer he wants. Breaking news. That's like the most rage baiting way of saying the Yankees have not signed anybody yet.
It's also it's coming straight out of Boris's mouth too. Just to get he knows how he's playing these guys like a he's playing all of Yankees Twitter like a fiddle right now, saying. No one wants to go to New York right now.
Yeah, I have to, like, guys, we're recording this at 7:07, so I'm going to be streaming in, like, the next few minutes. I don't know how long I'm going to hold it together. Like, I don't know how long. I have, like, and I've been blowing out my voice.
Protect your voice. We need you for Monday.
I woke up today, my voice feeling better. I blew that shit out by 11:30 in the morning.
Terrible. You got to have some restraint, Ryan.
Dude, I can't do it. I'm like here with like just the stupidness. It's whatever.
Well, don't worry. We're gonna sign Bellinger, and then people will be upset we didn't get Tucker. So no matter what, you're gonna be pissed.
We're gonna wrap things here. We're gonna end on a high note, guys. Really thank you guys for tuning in and checking out Fireside Yankees. It's a blast always recording with Chris and Jacob, and you guys have shown us a ton of support, so we really appreciate it. Like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. And if you want to get other versions of our content, you can check our social media pages, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook. We've got clips, posts, social posts, discussion posts, all that stuff. And you can download on Spotify or Apple Podcasts to get the audio version of this episode. We'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody.
Yep, watch my Angels video.
Yes, do that.
Perfect.